Okay, so we're holding at the bottom of Kufstamach Gimel on the Bays, but actually I realized Kufstamach Gimel on the Bays, bottom, yeah. But I realized actually the previous piece of Gemara, I left out, by mistake, I skipped a couple of lines in the middle of it, which changed the meaning a little bit. So let's run it through again. We went through in detail yesterday, but we'll run it down again, beginning from Rabbi Yechon on our five lines from the top of Kufstamach Gimel on the Bays. Okay, so we said that we had talked yesterday about what Rav says, that if you have any amount of space between the signatures of the Edim and the Ashauta underneath, then it's okay. And we talked about the idea that you would fill it up with lines or dots or smudges or what have you, or ink. So Rabbi Yechon Omar, this that we're talking about, that the maximum blank space of two lines is only between the Edim and the body of the Shtar, but if it's between the Edim and the Ashauta, underneath it, after the Shita Achas Possible, but he says even if you have only one blank line there, it will be possible. So the question is, Maishna ben Edim la'ashauta, why are we saying that between the Edim and the Ashauta you can't even have one blank line? Duma Gaius Liloi, because you might cut off the top star above the signatures of the Edim. Because of Huva Edim v'Shita Achas, then what you're going to do is you're going to write one full star together with forged signatures of Edim on one line. You'll write all on one line, on such and such a day, Reuben borrowed money from me, signed Shimon and Levi. And you'll have an Ashauta at the bottom, so everybody will think that it's good. Zekasava, which evidently means that Rabbi Yochanan holds Shtar HaBohu Ve'edah B'Shitah HaKosher. You have the Ashauta, it's still at the bottom over there. You don't have to reconnect. You have an original Shtar there that said that he borrowed from you $100. Since then, let's say he paid it all. Well, not even, whatever. So now you take the other part of the shtar, you write another thing on it that he borrowed $1,000 from you, you put two edim at the end of that line. If anybody comes and asks what you're doing with the shtar, why not? It's a one-line shtar, as we're going to say, Rabbi Yochanan says is kosher. I have an ashauta at the bottom, basically saw this and validated that these are valid signatures, and that's it.
Just an add-on.
Yeah, not an add-on, a separate shtar. You're going to cut off the top part, you're going to remove the top part, discard it, or whatever. And now you're going to take the blank space, the one space above the signatures of the Edim, we're saying, or above the Ashauta rather, below the signatures of the Edim, above, yeah, write something there. Vikasava, which evidently means Rabbi Yechon holds Shtar HaBohu Ve'edim V'Shikachas Kosher, evidently he holds then that if you have a Shtar where the entire body of the Shtar plus the signatures of the Edim are all on one line is Kosher. Ihochi, if you're going to go like that, Ben Edim L'Ksav Nami, don't you have a similar problem if you have a space between the body of the Shtar and the Edim? You'll have a similar problem. You'll cut off the top star, not like in the previous one where you cut it below the signatures of the Edim. So you have your original star with two Edim, but no Ashauta, and now you'll take the bottom piece that has the Ashauta and write a new star on it. But fine, even if you have space between the star and the Edim, similarly, Duma Gaius Leliloi, he may cut off the top star because of my devotee. He'll write whatever he wants in that one or two blank line space. But he said, you can't, okay, not two lines, but one line. He said you can have one or one and a half or whatever blank lines between the star and the Edim. The Hasimi Sadi, and then you have perfectly good signatures of Edim at the bottom. Why isn't Rabbi Yochanan concerned about that? The answer is Kastava, because Rabbi Yochanan holds, it's true you can have a star where the body of the star and the two signatures of the Edim are all on one line. However, you can't have what we would have in this case, which is you'd have a one-line shtar and then below it two signatures of Edim. That, he agrees, would be possible precisely for that reason, because you could have potentially that problem.
The signature of the Edim should be exactly up to the last line.
No, meaning, in other words, therefore, so he says if you have one long line with the signatures of the Edim at the end of it, that'll be valid. And that is why he's saying that you can't have any space before the Ashauta, because that would make the possibility that you could indeed do that. However, if you're talking about the original signatures of the Edim at the bottom of the shtar, if you're going to try to use those for a new shtar, what are you going to have? There's no right margin on the side of those Edim. They sign, as we said at the very end yesterday, as much close as possible to the right margin. Therefore, the only way you could do it is you would take the blank space below the bottom of the shtar, you would cut off the top shtar and discard it or whatever, then you'd take that one or one and a half blank line, write a new shtar in there, and you'd have signatures underneath it. Rabbi Yechon would agree is possible. Kasav, a shtar above a shita achas, if you have a shtar that's written on one line, the edim of a shita acheras, and the edim on that shtar are on the next line, is in fact possible. So therefore, you have no problem. Even if there's nothing he can do with that last line. If he were to add something to the end of the existing shtar, we said, Eimel Meidim Mishitach Rani, he can't learn from the bottom line. If he was going to cut off the top shtar completely and try to write a new shtar there, it would also be possible, because it was only...
Part, you cannot
No, not because of the last line, but because you can't have a shtar where it's a one-line shtar and then two edim underneath it. You can only have a one-line shtar where the signatures of the edim are on the same line.
And why don't we say this is a shtar for you?
In principle, that's basically what it is. But we're saying, the reason...
But even if it is on one line, shtar chren.
No, but if it's a shtar chren is when you have a shtar above it, because we're afraid you may have added something in over there before. Yeah, but like Rav Shmuel said yesterday, we're not going to say that a large shtar is kosher and a small shtar is false.
If you have signatures next to that line, these signatures could have been false.
That's the point. That's why we don't want to allow there to be a possibility of an ashtarta underneath it. Yes, of course you could write a one-line shtar. That's why we won't allow a space above an ashtarta. That's why we won't allow a blank space above an ashtarta to prevent that from happening. If you forge an entire shtar with signatures, all that's going to happen is the other guy is going to say, well, I claim this thing is forged, let's bring it to base here. And he won't be able to validate it because they are, in fact, forged signatures.
So in that case,
there won't have been an ashtarta. If there wasn't an ashtarta in the first place, then yeah. Okay, so now the question is, why don't we have to be concerned about another possibility? What if, for example, he were to take, he has an original shtar there, and then there's one blank line before the signature is there. Again, let's assume he cuts off the top shtar. All he has left now is that one blank line with the two signatures of the Edom underneath. What if he were to write in that one line, he were to write, fine, a shtar with one or with signatures of two Edom at the end of it, and then there's another two Edom below that. So now he'll say, because I'm nolad rabba seidim mudavi. That actually he'll claim that I had four edim when I had this thing done. I wanted to make sure that everybody knows it for sure. So I had four edim instead of two. Yeah. Well, he wouldn't say they're kosher. He'd say all four are kosher. And then if we want to validate it, he's going to say, okay, so he'll make sure to use for Reuven's and Shimon's signatures, he'll make sure to use signatures of the people who died 50 years ago, so nobody's going to be able to validate it. Meanwhile, there'll be Levi's and Yehuda's signatures. Those can be validated because those are, in fact, the original signatures from the shtar, and then they have a problem. The answer is kasava, because that won't work, because Rabbi Yechanan holds koki high gavner in a situation like that. Ein mekayim in oisim in edim shalomata. You cannot be mekayim at taka based on the last edim on Levi and Yehuda. Elam in edim shalomayla. You have to use the ones that are on the same line as the shtar, precisely to avoid that problem. So therefore, in a case like this, if he brings a shtar and claims, well, yes, I had Reuven, Shimon, and Levi and Yehuda sign on it in order to be mefaris in it, we will say, okay, but Levi and Yehuda's signatures are not on the same line as your one-line shtar, therefore we're going to ignore them. We want to validate based on Reuven and Shimon's signatures, and if you can't validate it, which in fact you won't because they're forged, then that's it. Nothing doing here. And so that way we've taken care of the problem.
Let's say the true signatures that were there initially,
right,
before he cut the shtar.
Right.
Now, can they testify that, yes, it's their signature, but it's not the shtar that was originally there?
Well, that's what we're saying. We won't even need that. We will discard those signatures altogether. We will ignore them and say, if you, Malga, want this shtar to be considered valid and we based and are going to be mekayim it, you have to show that the signatures of Reuven and Shimon, the two signatures that are on the same line as your one-line shtar, are valid. Otherwise, nothing new.
It's not enough to say the signatures are valid.
What do you mean it's not enough?
It has testify number one, the signatures are valid, and the shtar is the same.
That's the point, in other words. If in this case, he forges Reuven's and Shimon's signatures on the same line. Good.
We're not talking about forging signatures.
Well, then what are you talking about? Levi's and Yehuda.
They
cut the shtar. But
they're not forging the signatures.
So then what is he going to have? He's going to have a one-line shtar,
yes.
And on the next line, he's going to have Levi and Yehuda. We just said it, and says that's possible outright. That's possible outright. The only way it could conceivably be kosher is one line shtar because of that problem, because you might cut off from an existing shtar. The only way it would be kosher is if you have a one line shtar with the signatures of Adam on the same line, and in that case, if you have additional signatures underneath, we're going to ignore those and only focus on the ones on the same line. What about writing half what?
A line and a half.
A line and a half. So we said before, Tosfos had said that if you ended a shtar in the middle of a line and then you have a line and a half space there before the signatures of Adam, then it'll tack it be possible because that problem, because in that remaining half line, you could be writing stuff. Okay, good. Getting back to what we said in the previous sugya. Amar Rav, shtar habahu ve'edav ala machak. We said that Rav had said that if you have a shtar where the body of the shtar as well as the signatures of the edim are on erased parchment, on previously erased parchment, we said it's kosher. Why don't you have to be worried that what he's going to do is afterwards he will erase the body of the shtar, and he'll leave the signatures of the edim and write a new shtar on top. The answer is in a German. Parchment looks different when it was erased one time versus when it was erased two times. So if you do that, it will be noticeable. The top part, which has the body of the shtar, is going to look different than the bottom part where the signatures of Edom are, and therefore we'll know something is fishy there. Okay, the question is, what about another possibility? Why don't we have to be worried about a case like this? What this owner of this, what this person is going to do is follows. He's going to, so we're saying the body of the shtar, we're saying, let's say for example, in other words, so he has a piece of parchment that originally had a shtar on it, that originally had a shtar on it, with Edom, you know, the whole nine yards. Now what he's going to do is, so we're saying that we can write a new shtar on that, and it's no problem, because if he erases the top part, it'll be noticeable.
Yes.
But what about, he might do like this, he'll put more ink in the place where the Edom are expected to sign, then he will erase it. He may put ink on the space where the Edom are going to sign, and then he'll erase it. Now when he goes and erases the top part and writes a new style there, it'll be something that was erased twice, and then it won't be distinguishable.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? It has to look an answer. The answer is that Rav would hold. The answer is that Edom can only sign on an erased area if it was erased in their presence. So therefore, they themselves, if they see there were dots or markings or whatever over there, and then it was erased, they themselves are expected to realize that there's something fishy over there and not sign.
Do they know this?
They have to know. They have to have a little common sense, basically. I mean, even we said Edom can be Ami Aretz, but they what?
If someone brings you something to sign and there's five lines that are whited out and written over and I agree. Anyone's going to have the common sense not to sign.
The truth is, I mean, Tosfos does bring up the point. They have a long explanation of this of the sugya, somewhat different than the way that Ashbam explains it. And among other things, the Rivam points out in the middle of it that you can say maybe that Edom are not going to be as medayek about such a thing, as so sharp about such a thing as Beis Din. But nevertheless, though, the point is that, therefore, they may not be able to recognize, that's what Tosfos is saying, they may not be able to easily recognize the difference between erased once or erased twice. They still have to know enough to not sign on something that was erased, unless it's erased in their presence, to avoid problems like this. In other words, what we're saying is,
are they instructed by Beis Din?
They may not be.
The
but
fact they know how to write.
The fact they know how to write shows, they know something, yeah.
I didn't know that you
had
to.
I'm sure people heard eventually. If you're in the world, you eventually hear people who try to forge starters by erasing something and rewriting or whatever. A little common sense you have to have, you know. I mean, by the same token, we talked about yesterday. I mean, you have to make sure to sign as close as possible to the right margin, because otherwise you'll have space over there where the guy can conceivably write something else over there. Yeah, exactly. And if you don't do that, that's your problem. You adapted an option. You're the one who caused your problem. Yeah. Okay. All right. Maisvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction, though. A Braisa says, Hu an yor ve'edom al machat kosher. We have another Braisa that says that if the body of the shtar was written on a clean sheet of paper, only the signatures of the Edom is on an erased area, then such a shtar is kosher. Now, the Rashbam does add the detail, we're still going to have to be mekayim those signatures, they're still going to have to recognize their signatures, et cetera, to make sure that it wasn't forged. But the question is, why aren't we concerned that he's going to erase the top part of the shtar then, because of my debay, and then he's going to write whatever he wants, and then you're going to have now a shtar where the body of the shtar and the edim are all on something that was erased only once, and they're going to look both the same exactly. The answer is, you're right. But if you have a situation like that where you're going to have Edom sign on an erased area, they have to specifically write as follows. Anachna Sadi, we the Edom, Chasamna al-Machka, we sign on an erased area, Ushtara Kosov al-Manyara, and the shtar was written on a clean sheet of paper.
Yeah.
No. So now, if later on he were to erase the top part and write something else over there, automatically we would know from that inscription that there's something wrong over here, because automatically we're going to know there's something wrong, because they say that the shtar was written on a clean sheet of paper, and we see it wasn't. We see it was previously erased. Now, the question becomes, the Kastri Hecha, where exactly are they supposed to write that declaration? If they're going to write it under their signatures, Gaius Leihel, just cut it off. There's no obligation to have anything under the signatures, so he can just cut it off, claim that there was never any such thing there in the first place, and he's home free. Eloi, and if it's above their signatures, Machiklai, fine, I'll just erase it together with the rest of the shtar.
Eloi
mean above their signatures, yeah. The answer is the kasvi bein sahad al sahad. The answer is what they have to do is they have to write it between the signature of one aide and the other signature. So now you've covered your bases. Now, for one thing, the Tosfos really points out a practical matter. If he were to try to erase that, he'd be afraid to, because he might end up erasing the signatures of Adam as well. So there's that. But besides that, also there's other considerations. Also, if he were to erase it again, they signed L'Hatchila on an erased area. If you erase that now, you're back to the same thing. You have an area that was erased once and an area that was erased twice, and it's going to look suspicious. So therefore, therefore it'll be called. There is an interesting point, by the way, that the Rishonim talk about. The Rashba and the Ra'ah disagree on this question. If you have this statement written between the signature of one aid and the next, doesn't it amount to that only the second aid is testifying on the statement? How can you have something? How can you have a statement like that that's only certified by one aid?
You mean only the first aid testifying?
No. So you have the body of the shtar, then you have the signature of Reuben, then we sign on an erased area, then the signature of Shimon. Doesn't it amount to that only Shimon is signing on that declaration?
Or even the second aid is signing only on the declaration and not on the shtar.
But that's not the point they bring up. Because the declaration itself specifically refers to the shtar. It says the shtar was written on a clean sheet of paper. But anyway, so you do it. Right, okay, yeah, okay. Yeah, but still, it's still only one signature of an aid. Okay, so you have the Rashba and that argue on that. The Rashba says it's fine, because the fact of the matter is we have no particular reason to think that the second aid is lying, and therefore, yeah, we can accept his signature, even if the statement only has his signature underneath it, that's good enough. On the other hand, there are all argues with that, and he says that not. So you have a couple of different approaches among the Rishonim. What he would say exactly? Maybe they have to repeat the statement twice: one above Reuben's signature, one above Shimon's signature. Anyway, but once we do that, then we're home free. So the question is, the Gemara asks Ema Sefer, what about, look at the last part of the Braisa, who ala machak the edav ala niyogos? So if you have the other way around, the body of the shtar is written on erased paper and the signature of the edav are on the clean part, then it's possible.
Who
in the shtar itself? Yeah. Am I possible? Why should it be possible in that case? Hochanami nichtivu hochi. Why can't they write the same kind of thing? Anan sadi, chasam na al-niyara, we aidim sign on a clean piece of paper, or shtar al-machka, and the body of the shtar is written on erased paper. The answer is, because hashanami, my amit, and the part of the question is, hashanami, because even now also, my amit, what are you going to say, mochik, chozer, mochik, he may erase it and then erase it again. Again, he may erase the top shtar over there and write a new shtar, and he has the signatures still on a clean sheet of paper. And we just said that you can tell the difference between whether it was erased once or twice.
And they have to write that it was only erased once. Okay.
No. Well, I mean, if they write that it was written on machka b'pashtos, it means that it was erased only once. But yeah, the answer is hanimili hechad chsimi sadia machka. That only applies when the edim themselves are signed on an erased space. Where then, of necessity, you're not going to erase that thing, because what are you going to do? Why should you bother forging signatures when you have good signatures over there? So then it'll be noticeable, the part that was done once and the part that was done twice. But when the edim are not signed on an erased paper, but on a clean part of the paper, lo yadia, then it won't be so obvious, because you don't have anything to easily compare it to. The top part of the shtar, sure, you're going to see it's erased. But you don't know how many times. It's not easy to tell in isolation whether a piece of paper has been erased once or twice or what have you. When you have it compared to something else, then it becomes easier to see. So therefore we're saying you have a problem. So yes, if the whole thing was on an erased paper, then you're fine. But if the shtar is on an erased paper and the edim are on a clean sheet, then you're not going to have an easy way of telling whether the top part was erased once or twice or three times or what have you. and therefore no good. Okay, so the question is, why not? Fine, we can't compare it on the same sheet of paper. Take another sheet of paper, and erase it, and then compare it that way, and you'll compare, of course, from one
piece on
a separate piece of paper. Take a separate piece of paper, write something on it, erase it, and then compare. Does the second piece look like the original shaft?
Well, the class has to be the same.
Right? The answer is, like Dami Machka, the Homagilta, exactly that. It's not the same, the erasing on one Megillah, the Machka, the Homagilta. It's not the same on one versus the other. One might be thicker, one might be thicker, so therefore the erasing is not as noticeable on one as on the other.
The class might be older, younger.
Yeah. Okay, so the question is, why don't we do something else? We will right now, in Basin, let's have the Adim sign on another piece of paper. And then we will erase. Then we'll erase their signatures. And we'll use that for comparison. In other words, let the Adim re-sign on that same piece of paper on some blank space on that piece of paper, and then we'll erase it and compare whether it looks like the other area on that piece. Because we want to make sure the pashtus, we want to see if the signature is
different pressure.
Yeah, I mean, because like this, we would say that the signatures of the Adim are no good. So like this, we want to see, are these signatures good after all? Are these signatures on a valid star or not? But yeah, because different people write differently, yeah. Okay, but it doesn't look similar when you were talking about the age of the parchment. Well, sort of. We're talking about the age of the erasure. The age of the erasure, when it was erased one day ago, it doesn't necessarily resemble what it looks like when it was erased 2 days ago. So if the shtar was written yesterday and we're bringing it today to Beis Din for Kiyum, we're not necessarily going to be able to tell. Okay. Question is, for the shaye, fine, why don't we wait another day? We'll have them sign in another place on the shtar today. We'll erase it. We'll wait till tomorrow, and then we'll check. That Tosfos says that actually there's a girsa that there are Rishonim that don't have the girsa of this last question. The Rashbam also mentioned some Sfarim have this girsa, some don't. Tosfos says the ones who don't say because the Gemara didn't bother asking the question because it knows by the same logic. It's just like a 2-day-old erasure doesn't look the same as a 1-day-old, neither does a 3-day-old one look the same as a 2-day-old one, so you're never going to catch up. But according to the girsa that we have here in our Gemara that has this girsa, evidently the whoever was good at that figure, eventually it stabilized. Eventually there may be a difference between 2 and 1. There may be a difference even, let's say, between 3 and 2. There's not going to be a difference, let's say, between 10 and 9. So fine, keep it for a few days.
What about the ink?
What about the ink?
The ink may change from day to day.
No, but Pashtus,
they use one ink.
No, in those times they use a pretty standard recipe.
No, I understand. Yeah. They use maybe a standard recipe, but still the inks that's aged one day is not going to look like the ink.
Well, but here we're not talking about the ink, we're talking about the erasure, but yeah.
Okay. They all use the
big pen. Yeah, okay. Anyway, Omer of based in Toyin. The answer is we do have to be concerned about a based in that might make a mistake. So that what kind of mistake? The Rashbam says they may not realize that they have to keep it that long, and they may end up mistakenly thinking, well, it looks different, so therefore. Now, the Ritva points out, didn't we learn? We learned at the end of the 8th parak, we talked about the whole question of whether we're concerned about Beis Din Toyin, and we concluded over there that we're not concerned about Beis Din Toyin. So why over here all of a sudden are we concerned about it? He says because of the difference.
What did we
learned about it on Kufan Ches. About 25 blocks ago that we had a machlokes over there about whether we're concerned about Beis Din Toyin.
On what topic?
The topic was we had over there about Tzavos Shivra. We had over there a case about that Adim are allowed to sign on a Matnas Shivra even if they don't know who he is, or according to the other opinion, no, they can't because are we concerned that Beis Din is going to mistakenly hold that the thing is valid? Anyway, the Ritva says the answer is, we're going to say the Beis Din. We're not going to say like the Rashbam. The mistake that Beis Din might make here is a mistake in halacha. Fine, they'll know the halacha. What they may not realize is the practicality to actually be able to distinguish the scientific thing to be able to distinguish this was erased 3 days ago. This was only erased 2 days ago. This was erased once. This was erased twice. They may not be expert enough to be able to make that distinction, and therefore we don't want to allow it.
And that's the deal.
So in the end, by the way, this that we said in the Gemara, they have to write this thing about that they have to write in the middle over there saying that we signed on a shtar, that we signed on an erased area, we signed on an erased area when the shtar was written on a clean sheet of paper. The Tzmeh actually says that the Yevit, if they didn't write that, it's also okay as long as there was a space between their signatures. Because again, if there's space between their signatures, then you can tell if you're going to erase more things over there, it's going to be noticeable because it'll be just different than the area where their signatures are.
So the space between is judging and has not been erased.
Right.
Whereas
they themselves are, yeah.
They can still be smart and right in that space and erase it.
Yeah, but then it'll be noticeable because it'll be erased more than once. Whatever. So, yeah. Okay. Then we said, okay, going back to the Mishnah now, we mentioned in the Mishnah a couple of distinctions between a get parshut and a get mekusher. One of them we said was that a get parshut, the edim was supposed to be on the front, at the bottom of it, as we were just discussing, and with a get mekusher, they're supposed to be on the back. We said in the Mishnah, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel ben Mekusher v'chola, he said that if a get mekusher, if they sign on the inside of it, it's okay, because a get mekusher can be made into a get parshut by unfolding it or untying it or whatever. Heshiv Rebbe, so Rebbe answered, L'divir Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. Rebbe answered to what Rav Chanina ben Gamliel was saying, that you could conceivably turn a shtar mekusher into a shtar parshut, and therefore it's okay if the signature is on the wrong side. Rebbe pointed out, no, V'haloi ein adom is mana shalzel is mana shalzel. The date on one kind of shtar is different than it is on the other kind. Namely, what do you mean? As follows. In those times, they generally dated shtaris by the years of the reigning king. So, Pashut, with a shtar pashut, we work like this. Molach Shana, if the guy has been king for 1 year, Monim L'Shana, then they write, this is in the first year of King Plain. Shtayim, Monim L'Shtayim, if it's in a second year, we write in a second year, etc. Mekusher, whereas in a get Mekusher, we add one extra year. Molach Shana, Monim L'Shtayim, if he's in office for 1 year, meaning this is his first year, we write that this is his second year. As a matter of covered for him, like as if to say he's already established an office. Well, we're going to see in a few lines. We're going to see that was the minhag of the Greeks or the Romans at that time, and the Chachamim accepted that as a valid thing to do in a get mekusher because we mentioned before the whole reason why we have a get mekusher, we said, is because we want to make it complicated so that Kohanim will be less quick to divorce their wives. So we made this as another distinction. That way, there has to be a little extra thought given to making a shtar mekusher that you have to add that extra year, which after all, Sofer all this year is used to writing in the year two of such and such a king, and now he has to remind himself that he has to instead write year three, so that slows things down a little bit.
And you could change a lot of things. I mean, if you don't give the right time.
We're going to talk about that soon. We're going to talk about that in a couple of lines. I will tell you the Meiri has an interesting take on it. He says the vote is that if you post date it 1 year, so if you have, for example, now is year two of this king, and you write year three, what happens when the husband, the kohen, sees it, mentally, psychologically, he's going to think, hey, you know what, this thing doesn't even come due for another year. I have a whole year to use it. And then, but meanwhile, during that year, we'll have plenty of time to calm down.
What about if the king dies before?
Then they have
to change all the...
No. In his second year, we write as if it was his third year. So that's fine. Any shtar, doesn't matter if he dies before his third year. Any shtar mekusher that's dated year three of this king, we understand that it was written actually in year two, and they only added one extra year to give him cover. So shtayim, monim legimel, if he ruled for 2 years, they write three, and therefore, and that's another way in which a shtar mekusher is different than a shtar mekusher.
But in the meantime, you'll have a new king.
No, it doesn't matter. It would be the equivalent of, now this here is Tavshin Ayin Zayin. It would be the equivalent of writing Tavshin Ayin Ches in a shtar. Doesn't matter. We understand when we see a shtar mekusher dated Tavshin Ayin Ches, we know it was written in Tavshin Ayin Zayin. It was post-dated. So fine, doesn't matter what happens in Tavshin Ayin Ches, because by that time, in a shtar mekusher, you'll be writing Tavshin Ayin Ches, etc. Okay. Therefore, so the problem becomes like this. If you're going to claim that a shtar, like Rav Chanina ben Gamliel was saying, that you can turn a shtar mekusher into a shtar pashut, if you do that, then you have a problem. It's post-dated. The zimnit now, a post-dated document in and of itself is kosher, as we've learned before. However, in this case, it creates a problem as follows. The zimnit de yazif mine zuzi de mekusher, it can happen that a loiva borrows money from a malva using a shtar mekusher, which is, again, post-dated 1 year. It says it's year three of the king, when really the transaction took place in year two. And with zrami le zuzi bene bene, meanwhile, during that year, he manages to raise enough money to pay it back. And then he'll pay it back. But Omalei, then when he comes to pay back the loan, he comes to the Malva and he says, Havli Shtaroi, okay, I'm paying off the loan, give me my document, so that now I can rip it up or whatever. But Omalei and the Malva claims, Irkasli, I lost the Shtar. Fine, in that case, because of Leitavra. In that case, the din is, as we're going to learn later on in the Perek, in that case, the din is, we're going to have a machloikos about it later on in the Perek, which is a basic machloikos that comes up in a number of places in Seder Nezikin. Do we say in that case that the loiva fine will pay off the loan, but the malva has to, in that case, write him a shover? Or does the loiva maybe have the right to be able to say, I'm not paying you back until you have my shtar? I'm not obligated to take a shover. We're going to learn about it in a few days, says the Shem. So, but if we say that he's going to write him a shover, tavra is a shover, and the shover, you're not necessarily going to be, the shover is not necessarily going to be, is not going to be necessarily a shtar kosher. It could be a shtar kosher, which is dated this year. V'chimati zimne, then when the third year of the king comes, assuming the king is still alive, mishavi le kosher, then the malva is going to take the shtar, which he kept all along, claiming that it was lost, turn it into a kosher, and now it looks like it's dated a year later, and then when the loiva comes with his shover, the malva is going to say, fine, that shover is on a previous loan that you borrowed from me last year. I have a shtar that shows you went from borrowed from me this year. That can create problems. So mela, in other words, by a regular case of a shtar ma'ucher, you know that it was written ma'ucher, and therefore you know that it was post-dated more, beyond the usual time, and therefore you know to be careful. Here, with a shtar ma'kusher, where it's not so obvious that a standard fit to a layman, that a shtar ma'kusher is regularly post-dated a year, then you have that problem. Okay. So that's what Rebbe is saying to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. Therefore, you can't say that all you have to do is unfold the shtar makosher and you have a shtar kosher. No, because then you can have a problem like this.
Why would you make a shtar chayiv or shtar makosher if the reason only applies for kohanim?
We said at the beginning of the parak, once the Chachamim established the format of shtar makosher, then they made it available. You can use it for any kind of shtar because they didn't want to make a distinction between gittin and other shtaris. But yes, he could do that. Whereas Rav Chanina ben Gamliel can say, I don't have a problem with that because I would hold the fact that in a case like that, you don't write a shoger. You just did in that case, the lawyer can say, I'm not paying you back until you give me my shtar. Fine, but in that case, that avoids the whole problem.
So he doesn't get paid.
The malva doesn't get paid. That's his problem. He'll have to make sure to find the shtar. Okay. So the question is, umid baki Rebbe memakusha. So we see in this discussion that Rebbe is obviously familiar with all the ins and outs of a shtar makosher. He knows this detail that it's dated 1 year ahead of what it should be. The question is, was Rebbe actually such an expert in the details of a shtar makosher to be able to say that?
Maybe he doesn't. He only missing this one
detail. Okay, but if he knows that detail, then it means. Don't we have a case of a shtar makosher that was brought to Rebbe? And Rabbi looks at the date and says, wait a minute, this document is post-dated. It says that it was written in year 3 of the king, and then now it's only year 2. But Zunin Rebbe, so Zunin, the name of one of the Chachamim, says to Rebbe, Kachman Hoga Shalom Azu. Yeah, this is the minhag of this people, the Greeks or the Romans, whoever it was. Molach Shana Monin Loishtayim, that if the king is in his first year, they write that it's the second year in his honor. Shtayim Monin Loishalish, and if it's the second year, we say that it's the third year. So yeah, that's our shtayim. So we see that Rebbe himself didn't know that concept. Zunin had to tell him. The answer is, Bosa Vishalom Zunin Savra. You're right, but after Rebbe heard that point from Zunin, then he understood it, and then he accepted it, and then that's when he pointed out, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, your argument in the Mishnah does not work on the basis of what I heard now from Zunin. Yeah. Another case. Hahu started to have a kosebe b'shnas 20 orchon. There was once a shtar that was brought to Beis Din that it said on it, it was written in the year of 20 orchon. So what does orchon mean? Now, it doesn't say what year it was. Orchon, so the Rashbam, the Rashbam says that Orchon means a king, and he brings it on the basis of a shodesh in Aramaic, which means proper, like this is the person who was properly appointed as king. Tosfos says that Orchon maybe is not a king, but rather a governor who typically only has a one year term. So the Gemara is going to talk about sometimes they'd be reappointed, but generally they'd only serve a 1 year term. In history, they had the governors of Athens and a number of other Greek cities went by the title Archon, which is probably similar to our word Archon here in the Gemara. Anyway, so what does it mean? What year of his was it? It just says in the year of the king Archon, but what year? According to the Rashbam, it's an Aramaic word. According to the other possibility, maybe it's a Greek word. So yeah. Amar Chanina, it means, Orchon means the first year. Therefore, you bodik emasai amat orchon ba'orchonuse. Therefore, we have to find out, when did this orchon, when did this king or governor, when did he assume office? And then we know that the year, when it says the year of plenty orchon, it means that year. Okay, the question is why? Say maybe the word Orchan means that he ruled for a long time. But how do we know it means the first year? Maybe it means the 10th year, maybe it means the 30th year, whatever. So Rav Hoshea said that the minhag of this people, again meaning I guess the Greeks or the Romans, is shana to shana koyin like Orchan, and the first year and when he's in office they call him Orchan. Shnia koyin like Digun. The second year they call him Digun, which means that the basic meaning of it is two, like D, like die. You have a number of words in English that are that borrow the root die from Latin, not from Latin, from Greek, where it means two. You have a duplex is one example. There's a lot of them, but yeah. So therefore, digun basically means the second year. The Ben Yehoyada points out it may have also had a meaning in Hebrew as well. They may have meant it Meloshim Yidgul Oroy Pekarav Aret, like you should be fruitful and successful, like a fish. Anyway, so therefore, the second year, they call him digun. So if it said that Orchan, it necessarily means the first year. The question is, why? How do you know? Maybe it means that he was originally king a few years ago, or governor or whatever. Then they removed him from office. They deposed him. Now he was reappointed again. And now, so fine, you're going to say that he's called Orchan, but you don't know then. Does it mean that this second time around? Does it mean the first year of his second term? Or does it mean the first year of his first term? In that case, if that would happen, they would write both words. They'd write Orchan and Digun to show the first one of the second time.
The second time.
Then they would write Digun, I guess. So therefore, so if it says just Orchan, we know that it means the first time. Tana Rabbana, we learn in a Braisa, a similar thing, speaking of numbers in Greek. Harei Nozir Hina, if somebody says I'm a Nozir Hina, which means one time in Greek, but well, if he does, okay, Hina we take out, because it means if he says that in another, then it means one time. Sumchosim, but Sumchos says if he adds words to it, then it's as follows. Hina achas, if he says I'm another Hina, means one time, because Hina is Greek for one. By the way, in this week's parasha, we have Bilam says in his first bracha to the Jewish people was today's Chumash in Chitas, Hen om levodat Yishkain. So the Medrash says on that, besides the simple meaning of Hain meaning behold, it meant Hain as in the Greek Hain over here as one. This is one unique nation. And then the Medrash mentions in that connection the famous idea that we've talked about before, that all the other letters of the Aleph Beis have a partner. Aleph goes with Tes to make up 10. Beis goes with Ches, etc. Hey only goes with itself to make up 10. Similarly, Nun only goes with another Nun to make 100. So therefore, Hein represents uniqueness, represents staying apart. Okay, anyway.
Hey goes with Hey.
Hey goes with Hey and Nun goes with Nun.
Helium, which is a noble gas.
What about it?
It also sounds like that.
Oh. Helium sounds like, okay, I guess. All right. Digun Shtar.
Helium was not.
No, it wasn't. No, okay. Let's go. Digun Shtayim. If he says I'm going to be another Digun, then it means twice, like we just said. Digun means the second time. Trigun Gimel. If he says I'm going to be another Trigun, then it means three times.
Geometry.
Yeah. Tetrigun means Arba, like tetra. Pentagon Chomesh. And if he says I'm going to be another Pentagon, then it means five times, because Pentagon has five sides.
Pentagon.
Yeah. Tana Rabbana, we learn a similar concept in a Braisa. Bayis Ogel, if you have a round house, Digun, Trigun, Pantigun, or if it has two corners, meaning it's shaped like a D, or Trigun, it's a triangle, Pantigun, or a pentagon, Einim Etame B'negoyim, such a house cannot become Tomei with Sarat, Tetrigun, but if it has four sides, and therefore four corners, Etame B'negoyim, only that can be Etame B'negoyim. Why is that before? Minahan Ingili, how do we know that? The Tana Rabbana, because we learn on a Braisa. L'mayla Oymer Kir Kiroi, earlier in the pasuk, when it describes the dinim of tzaraas and houses, instead of saying the word kir, instead of saying that you saw the nega on the kir of the house, which would mean one, it says kirois, which means two. And later on, lamata oim a kir kirois. Similarly, in a later pasuk, it says kir, where it says kirois, where it could have said kir. Therefore, it means another two. Harei kan arba, therefore, two plus two is four. Therefore, we see from the pasuk that only if a house has exactly four walls can it be matanim in a goyim, no more, no less. I'll continue tomorrow. By the way,